I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from COP28 host Dubai in the week of the UAE's National Day, celebrating the unification of the Emirates and the fight for independence from Britain. But casting a shadow over the UAE is COP28 centre of world attention, and likewise Saudi Arabia, for this week being awarded as site of World Expo 2030, is the alleged Gaza genocide backed by NATO nations. Both Saudi Arabia and the UAE have opposed the US, UK and EU nations by calling for a permanent ceasefire in Palestine. Well, the leading newspaper in this region is Arab News, and with me again in the studio is its award-winning editor-in-chief Faisal Abbas, previously editor-in-chief of Saudi Arabia's Al Arabiya English. Thank you so much, Faisal, for coming back on. A lot to get through this time since your last ongoing underground. I mean, before COP28, before Saudi Expo 2030, I suppose I should ask you about this shadow cast across this region. How difficult has it been for you personally and professionally just watching, witnessing thousands upon thousands of children being slaughtered by all this NATO nation weaponry in Gaza, Arab News covering it every day?
My sincere condolences. I now speak as a human being and an unfortunate citizen of this part of the region. Condolences to every citizen, every civilian that has been killed on either side. As an editor, it's been equally painful. It's always a little bit more painful when it's in your own backyard. But also, it was fascinating to look at how quickly things have changed. If you remember, the last time I was here with you in the studio over 2 or 3 months ago, the vibe was completely different.
Peace. We were talking about peace.
Absolutely. We were talking peace. Actually, just a few days before, in September, before the October 7th attacks happened, we were talking about the one peace deal that's going to solve all the regional problem, a Saudi peace normalization attached to a Saudi-Palestinian deal. And it's remarkable how things change, but I suppose the only constant in politics is change.
Arab News has been covering it minute by minute on the social media as well as in the paper, but coverage seems very different in your newspaper to a lot of NATO nation television media and newspapers. Is it a failure of empathy by journalists in Western Europe and the United States? Is it a failure? Is it racism against Arabs? Is it the Zionist lobby, that they can't appreciate what it means, regardless of Hamas? I mean, their favorite refrain is as if to empathize with the survivors of this, what's been called a Gaza Holocaust, is to somehow back Hamas. What do you feel when you see the coverage there and compare it to the coverage you're overseeing in Arab News?
I am editor of Arab News. I'm responsible for what's in Arab News. I am not responsible for what is in other countries or other newspapers in other parts of the world.
Just when
however, you watch. However, we have had this conversation before, and you know my views. I do despise lazy journalism. I do think you cannot narrow down conflicts, wars, into narrow or very shallow terms, which is what has been happening. It seems to me there is this obsession with black and white, with good and bad, cowboys and Indians. It isn't. This is a 75-year-old conflict, more than 50 years of occupation. There has been back and forth. There has been history. There has been attempts at peace. This conflict did not start on October 7th. And it's just, I wouldn't say shameful, but it's a disservice to the audiences of those channels who are led to think this whole conflict started on October 7th, which is absolutely not true.
But why do you think it's happening? I mean, you oversee newsrooms and you've overseen lots of journalists before. What do you think is going through their heads in the newsrooms in London, Paris, Berlin and Washington?
Again,
or New York.
Again, I'm responsible for what's my paper, but there is a tendency.
Saying October the 7th, if you start talking about context, if you start talking about history, you automatically somehow support the massacres of October 7th.
I mean, look, part of it, in my view, is simplistic. possibly lazy, possibly ignorant journalism. Not everybody, on some part of journalists. Unfortunately, they happen to be working in very influential media outlets. But let's not also separate the coverage from the political position. So the coverage is now becoming a bit more fair across different platforms, I'm talking in general, but the political positions have also changed. It was very one-sided. It was black and white. Israel has the right to defend itself, full stop, and nobody talks about the civilian casualties on the other side. And I started this conversation by saying, you know, every life lost on either side, every civilian life lost on either side is a life too many. I think the coverage has evolved, has become fairer as the political position in most Western countries has also started shifting. It's not there yet.
After the thousands of children have been slaughtered.
Absolutely. It's not there yet. We do hope to see a permanent ceasefire, and we do hope to see a recognition of the state of Palestine in the Security Council, because that is the solution to this conflict, and that is the biggest guarantor of Israel's security.
But of course, the fact that the New York Times and Amazon Washington Post then put the photographs that Arab News has been running for weeks before it, that was part of the narrative. That helped the US, UK, EU nation obsession with their saying there must not be a ceasefire narrative to take hold. The media must presumably take some of the blame for not showing the kinds of pictures that were on newspapers in, say, in Arab news and news outlets across the global south.
Oh, absolutely, but the needle has shifted, and you know, we can criticize as much as we want media in democracies, but they do have a sort of an autocorrect. It doesn't function all the time, but they do have an autocorrect function. You've seen the protests outside of the New York Times, calling them the New York crimes. You've seen the walkouts of employees. MSNBC have infamously and shamefully stopped the programs of three of their Muslim presenters straight a few days into the conflict. They've, of course, reversed the decision after a story that we did, by the way, at Arab News, exposing that, which I think is shameful. It's undemocratic. It's unconstitutional, actually, in the United States. So the needle is moving. It's not moving as quickly as we would have liked it to. All we're asking here is the fair and balanced journalism that we have been promised and we've been taught in textbooks in journalism at schools.
Well, of course, MSNBC deny it has anything to do with totalitarianism on their part. But as for
they've
Saudi,
they've not made a statement, to be fair, which says a lot.
As Saudi Arabia has its policy has changed on this alleged genocide. I mean, both Saudi and the UAE calling for ceasefires at the United Nations, and then Saudi Arabia, MBS saying there should be a global arms embargo on Israel. What do you think? I mean, I noticed Israel withdrew its support for Saudi holding Expo 2030, perhaps in response. Very, very odd response. But what do you think Saudi Arabia meant by that? Because obviously all the arms being used to slaughter the thousands upon thousands of children are NATO arms from the United States and the European Union and Britain.
I think what the position clearly says is you need to be fair across the board. So if arms producing countries such as the United States embargo selling weapons to countries that they think are using them for genocide or for war crimes, then that should be a rule that applies on everybody. Not have your favorites excluded. What's happening here is, again, with full sympathy for the innocent lives lost on October 7th, this does not justify the killing of over 15,000 people, innocent people. A lot of them are babies. A lot of them, there's been footage recently released of a baby, an infant really, that was picked up out of the rubbles. By a miracle, he or she is still alive. But you know, you and I, and possibly every human being on the planet, can agree that is not a terrorist. That cannot possibly be a terrorist. So where is the condemnation? Where is the sympathy? And how can we allow, as humanity, as countries that preach morality and preach human rights, for such a crime to be committed. So absolutely, an embargo should be across the board, and Israel should not be exempted if it is using these weapons to commit crimes such as these ones.
Well, clearly, Joe Biden, Rishi Sunak, European leaders, they know the pictures of the kind you just spoke about and said Israel has the right of self-defense regardless. And they knew that thousands of children were being killed and still didn't change their policy in any case. I mean, I want to return to Expo 2030 and the announcement for Saudi Arabia. But of course, the fact that Saudi Arabia and the UAE, today UAE National Day, have taken such clear positions for a ceasefire when the Americans and Western Europeans are saying a ceasefire only benefits Hamas. What do you make of the lies told against the UAE about COP28 being an exercise in fossil fuel negotiation and the increased arguable propaganda against Arab nations like Saudi Arabia and the UAE after their positions on Gaza?
This is twofold. Allow me here to answer first about the difference in positions, about the UAE and Saudi Arabia calling for a ceasefire and the US opposing it. I think the best answer to that is how Winston Churchill described the Americans, is that they will do the right thing after they've tried everything else. Saying that a ceasefire only benefits Hamas is very short-sighted. It is shallow and it is absolutely wrong. The reality is not just on this instance. There has been several previous incidents where Saudi Arabia, as a U.S. ally, as a U.S. friend, have advised, particularly the Obama administration and the Biden administration, that what they are doing is wrong, and has cautioned them that this will have consequences that will harm American interests. Forget about our own interests, forget about the regional interests. It will harm American interests. We warned them when they were negotiating with Iran, the nuclear deal, excluding Iran's other activities in the region back in 2016.
Before Saudi detente, yes, through China.
2016. And we warned the Obama administration that you're going about it the wrong way. And what was the answer? It was three Houthi, who are aligned to Iran, three Houthi attacks on the U.S. Navy. So what's happening now is just history repeating itself. We are advising, as Saudi Arabia, as people from this region, the U.S., we are advising Western countries that, you know, an immediate ceasefire is in everybody's benefit. But unfortunately, they cannot see through that. And the result of what they're going through now is going to be more hate crimes on the street. It's going to be breeding more terror. And by that time, it will be too late to pick up the pieces. With regards to your point, to your question regarding COP28, look, I think we're at the position now in this region where we sort of got used to the constant finger pointing and the double standards. One has to ask, why is it that when the UAE, which is a country that is doing its fair share in supporting sustainability, gets a lecture on the fact that it's an oil-producing country, when, you know, two cups ago it happened in Scotland, we didn't see the same rhetoric. The same argument can be argued regarding the World Cup in Qatar. Qatar has human rights abuses. I'll put my hands down, and I agree. Qatar does have its human rights abuses, but that does so did Russia before it, and so does the United States. Which country does not have human rights abuses?
Faisal Abbas, I'll have to stop you there. More from the editor in chief of Arab News after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the editor-in-chief of Arab News, Faisal Abbas. Faisal, at end of part one, we were just talking about arguably the weaponization of human rights. No response, by the way, from the ICC after the Arab League OIC conference saying that Israel has to be investigated. Clear that human rights, that human rights industry is now kind of over after the alleged genocide in Gaza?
I mean, if you want to go to technicalities, then they would argue that the ICC would only look into cases when nations, where nations are...
Well, Israel, I suppose, like they did to Russia.
But, you know, the Palestine isn't recognized as a nation. But if they want to argue that argument, then the right to self-defense is also only applicable against another country.
Exactly. Well,
It's not applicable, and this is not from me. This is from the Palestinian human rights rapporteur at the UN, Francesca Albanese, who is a human rights lawyer. The right for self-defense ceases to exist if you are an occupying power. So there's a lot of legal
clearly arguments. That wasn't appreciated by any Western European politician who clearly continually repeated that. Then, so why has the ICC been silent, do you think?
What is undisputable is the collapse of the moral high ground, or the perceived moral high ground, of many Western countries when we allow 15,000 innocent people to be killed, when we allow babies to be dug up from under the rubble, when we use fuel, water, electricity as a weapon. Who gave Israel the right to be able to turn on and off water? It's a basic human need. And I repeat to say this, this is in no way saying what happened on October 7 is justified.
But the fact you have to say that seems so...
No, but it's because...
Well, I mean, clearly the editor-in-chief of Arab News does not support the October the 7th attack.
Because it's very easy for people to pick and choose sound bites and say, but you're saying this. What I'm saying is, what happened, any innocent human life lost is a life too many on either side. But the simple fact, and the fact that we have to stress this is unbelievable. But that does not justify the killing. As they say, two wrongs do not make a right. You cannot kill 15,000 people because you had 1,200 people. And it's not a numbers, game, but you cannot give a carte blanche for a country to do whatever it wants to innocent people in this way and then retain the moral high ground. I think the moral high ground of the so-called moral high ground of many of the Western countries has now been exposed to the whole world's population.
But despite the Global South's differences with Winston Churchill, we've heard from the State Department claims that, look what happened to Dresden in response to the Nazis. That's how the NATO countries have been responding to the kind of criticisms you're making. Look at Dresden. Israel's just doing Dresden again.
Yeah, but two wrongs do not make a right. And you would argue that that happened a few decades ago. Since then, I believe there's been a lot of investment in weapon technology, precision technology. And since then, you know, arguably, you should have the means to wage wars in a way that causes less damage to civilian lives and civilian areas, unless you have a carte blanche from the world's biggest powers to do whatever you want. Thankfully, we are seeing that carte blanche slowly being withdrawn, a bit too late in my opinion, but let us pray for a permanent ceasefire and let us hope for a Palestinian state, because as I said earlier, that is the only way this conflict is going to end, and that is the best guarantor for Israel's security.
What can Arab countries do more as regards this happening again in another year's time? We've seen the bombing of Damascus International Airport, the civilian airport, and we've got detente with Syria, between UAE and Saudi and Syria. They're putting aid, they're giving aid, the Saudis and the Emiratis. They are there at the UN, forcefully saying ceasefire. Isn't oil one way to be able to force the issue here and save some of those children, not only for COP28, reducing production in defiance of Antony Blinken's call to increase production, but also to say, if you do this, production cuts will be greater than you will expect?
Well, oil is not a weapon in the same way that we don't want or we hope that Israel answers the calls and stops killing civilians. When you cut off oil, you are affecting babies in incubators all across the world. You're affecting school children. You're affecting the elderly. It's definitely not on the table, and there are very wise reasons why it's not on the table. But if you're asking me why I am optimistic that the Arab-Muslim approach this time is different, I'll tell you why. We are seeing an unprecedented unified front in the region with support from other global powers such as Russia and China, perhaps for the very first time in history. So remember, we had the détente with Iran. And the Iranian leadership attended the meeting in Riyadh and were signatories of the declaration. You had Arab rifts amongst themselves that have been resolved. So you have a unified front between Saudi Arabia and Qatar, which, as you know, hosts the Hamas leadership, which is a very powerful asset in this unified front at the moment. So what I'm trying to say is this time we're able to do more because...
Is it unified in rhetoric? Rather than action.
No, not really. There is, you can't have more action than
Theoretically, the Saudis could have sent in the military to attack Israel.
There is a team of Arab foreign ministers that have done, Arab and Muslim state foreign ministers that have done a world tour, which have started in China and just recently was in New York attending at the United Nations. I have not seen in the past few decades a more unified Arab-Muslim front, and we are hopeful that these diplomatic efforts, we are using every method in the book to try to get to a permanent ceasefire and try to get a recognition of a Palestinian state.
Do you think Arab countries are frightened of Israel? We've seen in recent days Elon Musk, such a powerful billionaire with X, formerly Twitter, He got frightened of Israel, arguably, because he was there taking a trip around the kibbutzes with Netanyahu. He hasn't taken up Hamas's offer to go to Gaza. How frightened are people of Israel in this region?
Well, I'll tell you, people are...
Of being called anti-Semitic, clearly.
Well, that can't be possible because we are Semites ourselves as Arabs. I think this right-wing coalition that Benjamin Netanyahu is leading, when you have one of your own minister, a culture minister nevertheless, saying they want to nuke Gaza, I mean, I hardly can think of anybody that wouldn't be frightened if those are the words that are being uttered by a member of cabinet. So can you just imagine if they implement that? Of course, they retracted the second day, but the fact that it was said, when the defense minister calls all Palestinians human animals and that they will be treated as such, that is a very frightening statement.
If their response to Saudi Arabia calling for an arms embargo was to stop them backing, I didn't even know they'd backed Saudi Arabia for Expo 2030, although Israel apparently denied backing Saudi. One sign, maybe, of optimism, perhaps there'll be signs of optimism at COP28 for saving the planet. Just explain what it means that Expo 2030 will be in Saudi Arabia, announced this week.
I think it's a huge victory for Saudi Arabia in terms of its diplomatic efforts, because, as you know, it took a lot of lobbying, but also an excellent opportunity to showcase the new Saudi Arabia, to showcase all the reforms that have been in a very interesting coincidence called Vision 2030. So people will get an opportunity to come to Saudi Arabia and witness really a miracle in the making, because what has happened in the last 7 years has been unprecedented on so many levels. It's one of the few countries in the world where there's actually, the Crown Prince called it the success story of the 21st century, and that is a reality. When you see that we are scheduled to to be the fastest growing economy in the G20 this year. When we exceed the target set for women employment or inclusion in the workforce, we went from less than 9% to more than 36% in less than 6 years. That is remarkable. And I don't want to even start talking about the architectural buildings that are being created, because that's the easiest part. But it is a melting pot of different cultures, and people shouldn't be surprised. I argue we have been holding Expo for 1,400 years. We have organized the Hajj since the days of the Prophet. So we are very used to welcoming people from all nationalities. And this will be an opportunity in a very different context, of course. But people will experience the Saudi hospitality and our excellence at welcoming visitors.
Well, just finally then, I mean, we've seen the smears against the UAE because of COP28. We'll no doubt see smears against Saudi Arabia because not so much it holding Expo, but because of its positions on numerous Global South issues. What more can GCC countries do to fight that? Or maybe it doesn't care, perceptions that are clearly created by some groups in Western Europe and in NATO nations against GCC countries, against Islam.
I think we should carry on by doing the right things, because they are in the benefit of our own people and of our own country. And one would hope that viewers, readers, listeners around the world are becoming more educated. You know, one, to take it back to the Gaza conflict, it was fascinating that, you know, people are constantly asking, do you condemn Hamas? Do you know who the biggest sympathizer or supporter of Hamas is? It is Benjamin Netanyahu. And those are not my words. Those are an editorial in the Times of Israel. So in one of Israel's own newspapers, they are blaming Netanyahu for what has happened. And they've said his strategy for the past 15 years of undermining the legitimate Palestinian authority in the West Bank, where Hamas does not exist, and while at the same time empowering Hamas. In fact, he is quoted to say, if you want to forever forget or disable a Palestinian state, all you need to do is continue to support Hamas.
Well, it's certainly a recruitment sergeant, I think, as seen by most of the Global South, the actions of Israel armed by these NATO nations. I should just say, COP28, all these important dignitaries flying in to Dubai, do you think there'll be a lot of Gaza on the sidelines, and do you think there'll be success stories emerging out of this while simultaneously we see what's going on in the West Bank, in Syria, in Gaza?
The UAE is a very important player, and hats off to them for carrying on with what they need to do with the important agenda they have for COP28, for the important agenda that they have in a lot of humanitarian aspects in their mission to Mars. They continue, hats off to them, they continue with disregarding the virtue signaling, the finger pointing, and the silliness that goes on. I think world leaders will be well advised to have serious conversations with the leadership of the UAE, with the leadership of Saudi Arabia, and try to find solutions to the 21st century from the country that, as described by the Saudi Crown Prince, is going to be the 21st century success story. I think there's a lot of wisdom in having these discussions and start having constructive conversations as opposed to destructive ones.
Faisal Abbas, thank you. And that's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday here in host of COP28 Dubai with Dr. Ian Fry, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Climate Change and Human Rights. But until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV, on rumble.com to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.